Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and visit the website at www.dsmsports.net. Really great episode for you guys today. We are really thrilled to be talking to the Director of Interactive Marketing for the hottest team in the NBA, the Atlanta Hawks. Going to have a great conversation with Micah Hart coming right at you. But first, this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is KeywordTool.io. That is the website, KeywordTool.io. And it's a great little quick way to do some keyword SEO research, especially for YouTube, I'd say, although it does work with Google, Bing, and the App Store as well. But instead of searching into the Google search bar and sort of seeing what comes up when you start typing in a certain word, and you can see how a list will populate of the most popular search terms based on that initial keyword or keywords, this website will generate a list for you, and you can get a quick list on your clipboard then of what is really trending sort of in terms of searches that the keyword tool recommends for YouTube, for Bing, or for Google. So it's a great way, especially when you're looking to name a YouTube video you're trying to attract traffic to, or maybe a blog post on a website. It's not the most analytical way to do things, of course. If you have more time to do SEO research, you can use Google's keyword tool, other blog mentioning tools to look at the best way to title blogs. But if you want something quick, easy, and seamless for YouTube, Google, Bing, and even the app stores, check out KeywordTool.io. Play with it, have fun with it, consider some uses for it, and that is this episode's helpful tool. All right. Hope you enjoy this episode's helpful tool. We will be right back to have a great conversation I think you're really going to like with Micah Hart, the Director of Interactive Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks. Coming right at you in a minute. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called KeywordTool.io. It's a great way to optimize for SEO beginners. If you're looking to optimize something on YouTube or a blog for Google and even an app and what you're naming an app or putting in the description for the App Store. But we're not going to talk about keywords today because our guest today is getting lots of traffic to their website and social media. And we are very pleased to have on Micah Hart, the Director of Interactive Marketing with the NBA's hottest team, the Atlanta Hawks. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Micah.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Well, it is great to talk to you. As I said, the Hawks are one of the hottest teams in the NBA, not just for what they're doing on the court, but for what you and your team are doing off the court in digital and social, and really getting a lot of notoriety, showcasing the brand, and having a lot of fun, and doing a lot of really cool things with content, from Spotify to getting Jiffy with it, of course, with lots of good GIFs, and really doing a good job. And we're going to have a great conversation about how you guys are kicking butt on social.
Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
I appreciate it. I'm interested to. So you fall on the GIF pronunciation side of things.
That is what I've heard is the appropriate terminology. What side do you guys fall on with the Hawks?
I mean, I always call it a GIF, but I've heard people with very strong opinions on both sides.
Well, we'll say maybe it's a East Coast East Coast West Coast thing, North South thing. I don't know. We'll have to, if the Hawks win the NBA title, I'll start calling them GIFs. How about that?
That's fair.
All right, Micah. Before we get into the meat of the conversation today, we always have to have our listeners hear about our guest career paths. You know, you're having a dream job, so to speak, there in the NBA. So give us a little idea of where you came from, how you came up in the business, gaining experience, and any tips for our listeners along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Mississippi, and realized pretty early on that professional sports as an athlete was probably not going to be a career option, and wanted to be a sportscaster. That was kind of my dream. I went to University of Texas for undergrad and had a great time. Worked, college radio, did internships at TV stations, etc. But I, still felt like I needed to go to school if I wanted to be a sportscaster. So I went to Syracuse for grad school for broadcast journalism. Which, if...
Very well known.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of known as the birthplace of sportscasters. It seemed like the right place to go. I got up there and loved it, had a great time with it. But while I was there, sort of realized that sportscasting, you know, sort of the sports center or, you know, local TV sportscaster really wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. I was more interested in play-by-play. So I took an internship when I graduated at Lehigh University, working in the sports information department and also doing play-by-play. Lehigh being a school that's got a pretty small staff, you know, it's a small Division I school in some sports, you know, lower division in some of the others. We had 25 varsity sports, and there were three of us in the sports information department. So I was pretty much at every single event, either doing sports information or broadcasting it.
Oh, my.
Which was, I mean, it was a great, great incubator. I learned a lot. I'm a huge sports fan. I grew up a huge sports fan, but I'd never really, I'd never seen wrestling that wasn't fake, spoiler alert. I'd not seen field hockey before. I mean, there were a lot of sports that I was new to and had to broadcast like I knew what I was talking about. So I had really steep learning curves.
Which was the toughest?
Field hockey without, well, field hockey and wrestling, I guess I'd put as a tie. Wrestling because I mean, at least on first glance, like they'd change the score and I'd be like, I didn't see anything happen. I'm expecting sort of WWE style, you know, somebody pounding the mat, 1, 2, 3, you're out.
Right.
So that took, that was definitely a big learning curve. And then field hockey, just the rules are so hard to follow. You know, whistles are blowing like every 5 seconds. There's seemingly no continuity to it whatsoever. But at least with field hockey, there's a ball and a goal. So, you know, I could tell when someone scored. I couldn't necessarily tell why the run of play had stopped. But you know, so I loved that. It was a lot of fun. But I was living in the middle of nowhere. No offense to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. But you know, I just kind of realized that there was more to it than just the job, and I needed better balance between personal and professional. Which I think, frankly, you know, you talk about advice. Like, I think that's a big piece for anybody to know, kind of where you fit on that spectrum. Some people live to work, and some people work to live. And you can be anywhere on that spectrum, but it's important to know where you follow, where you fall. So, you know, kind of wanted to move to a place where I had more of an outlet for, you know, friends and family. And, you know, I wish I had a great story of, you know, my resume or this, that, and the other. But as I think is often the case, I was in the right place at the right time. I came down to Atlanta for a week to look around. And the Hawks and Thrashers had an opening for a web position. I had done a lot of web stuff for the Lehigh Athletics website, so it, you know, somewhat qualified me for it. And I was able to get in to talk to somebody, and it kind of just went from there. You know, I kind of always say that had I not gotten that job, I really don't know where I'd be now, because moving to a big city, I'd sort of assumed that, you know, I very likely would not be able to work in sports. I'd kind of, you know, come to terms with that fact, and it was just fortunate that I got to stay in it.
Hey, but you had the experience, and getting that experience at Lehigh, having the experience at Syracuse, I mean, don't sell yourself short, Micah.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, and there's definitely an element of truth to that. The guy that hired me at Lehigh was a Syracuse grad, and the guy that hired me for the Hawks had also done a math in journalism and knew Syracuse's reputation. And you know, this was back in the day, so long ago, 2004. You know, there wasn't the LinkedIn's, those kind of sites where you just see, you know, just hundreds and hundreds of resumes. I'm sure they got a bunch, but it was still a little more, probably a little easier to sift through. You know, we posted our social media coordinator position a couple years ago, and in 2 weeks had 540 resumes. And I can only imagine what that would look like now. So,
Probably double.
So came down in 2004, and I worked on the websites for the Hawks and Thrashers for 6 seasons, and then moved over to NBA when they moved down to Turner. So still here in Atlanta, I worked over at NBA.com on the editorial side. For a few years, and then the opportunity sort of popped up to come back to the Hawks in sort of a similar role as before. Although, you know, I kind of say that as you get further along in your career, You know, it's great, you make more money, you get more responsibility, but you don't get to do all the fun things you used to get to do. So whereas I used to get to go to practices and travel with the team and stuff like that, now I oversee the people that get to do that stuff. Wow. So it's still a lot of fun, but, you know, maybe a one step removed from all the fun stuff of the past.
What motivated going back from the NBA to the Hawks?
It was a combination of things, but it was definitely just a great opportunity. We had, when I previously worked here, we had a group that encompassed web, email, research, database, you know, just a lot of different things. And I think while I was gone, sort of realized that that was a lot for one group to cover, especially as the space continued to grow. Mm-hmm. So they split the department, and now we have sort of two separate. We have a database analytics department, and then they kind of broke off digital into its own group. And so the chance to kind of come back and, you know, sort of put my stamp on it, you know, and be in that position to actually, you know, have a plan and enact it has been a lot of fun.
Because I imagine I mean, there are definitely a lot of similar things going on, especially in terms of partnership activation and overall content. But when you're going from the NBA back to a club, you have the entirety of the ticket sales piece, of course, as well, and that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, our website is the largest driver of single game ticket purchases. So, you know, that's an area that I think is still evolving. You know, I know where I think it's likely headed, but I could be wrong. You know, some teams, you know, teams are all over the spectrum. Some use it entirely for sponsorship. Some do it as just a straight ticket driver. And I think some are really trying to create their own, you know, media platforms, which I think, you know, we're working towards. But everybody has to be, you know, on the same page with that. And I think, you know, there's still a lot of people in, you know, it's not just sports, I'd say. I mean, look at the newspaper industry, who have just been slow to adapt to what digital can provide. But I think at the, you know, when all said and done, whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what have you, I imagine you'll see most brands kind of carving out their own space as their own media platforms.
And that certainly has been going on for a long time. It's getting a lot bigger now, more focused. But when you first were coming up with the Hawks and Thrashers, coming up in the web development game and going to the NBA and then back, what were you more in a PR role and when it came in terms of content or more of a marketing role? And when did it start to become about more content marketing and really owning that space with content that the team was producing?
Yeah, I think social media has played a big role in it. I think that's provided teams, you know, a better ability to sort of have a personality and get out in front of the fans. It's great producing content, and I guess to answer the first part of your question, I've always been on the content side of things. Okay. You know, we've always worked with PR, you know, to put together the things we want to do. But my background is definitely in content creation. So, you know, for me, I guess it's fortuitous that content marketing is kind of the way things are going, because that kind of plays right into my strengths. But I, you know, to me, like, the advent of social media and the ability to really give a voice to the organization that's not just a PR mouthpiece has really made it a lot easier for us to execute on that stuff. And I think, frankly, that's why probably people haven't gone to team sites in the past, because I think the expectation is, you know, anything you have written there is going to be, you know, completely shilling for the team. You're not going to see, you know, critical pieces, you know, why did the coach call that play? This guy needs to be fired. And that's not to say that that even has a place there, and I don't even think it really does. But I think you can give that sort of behind-the-scenes look to the fans and that access and not necessarily lose your credibility. I think people will always, you know that a team's going to put somewhat of a rosy-colored glasses spin on things. But again, with social media, really been able to, you know, have that voice and create an identity that I don't think we necessarily were able to do strictly from website and, you know, from video, from written pieces, etc.
And where did that light bulb kind of go off for you made personally or even within the departments along your career path? Or was it while you were first with the Hawks and Thrashers running their web, or when you were in the NBA, where all of a sudden social media became just a really big part of the game, and all of a sudden it was expected to have a voice and to have more content that fans actually wanted?
Honestly, I don't know that there was a specific day where the light bulb went off. I've always believed that you could drive traffic by having compelling content. I'll say this. I don't know if this has to do with voice necessarily, but I remember this as a fan. I never used to go to MLB.com. There was never really any reason for me to go because I sort of assumed it was just like other corporate entities' websites. And then I remember when Steven Strasburg made his first start for the Nationals, and they live streamed it straight from the homepage of MLB.com, which I just thought was genius. And so I watched it. I'm a baseball fan. I was curious to see how I was going to do. And then not long after that, there was a no-hitter in progress, and they were live broadcasting, they were streaming that the last couple innings. And literally it was like those two instances, and all of a sudden my entire, use case for MLB.com had been changed to the point that anytime there's anything going on in baseball, I will automatically go to MLB.com because I know that's where I can get it. And I think for me that was kind of like a lesson, like, you think that, people have, an opinion about something and they're never going to change it. I do think people's minds can be changed. And I think they can be changed quickly if you provide them the rationale for why that change is necessary. So I'd say that was maybe a part of it. And I think, since I've come back, I've definitely think we try to create content that people will find, informative and entertaining. I think we've had more success with that on social, without question, than we've had, just on straight.com. But, it's also, it's easier, and the heavy lifting is a lot less when it comes to social.
You just made a lot of great points there, really, really articulated the case for content marketing really well, and really, really owning that content and thinking about, if you hear something maybe from a friend via a text message that some big signing is about to happen, are you going to NBA.com or Hawks.com, or are you going to ESPN.com or Yahoo Sports? And it really is starting to change, and you spoke well to that. I did want to also ask you about really how you talked about how the departments are kind of split with the Hawks right now, with you running the digital and then others running more of some of the content side as well. I guess just tell me a little about how the departments are organized there and how you guys do collaborate to make sure that what you guys are doing on social and digital is helping drive campaigns and objectives and branding and consistent messaging across the board.
Yeah, so our department is fairly lean. It's myself, and I've got two people underneath me. We've got a social media coordinator, Jared Wilson. I think you may have mentioned him earlier. He's obviously doing a great job, on our social media channels. And we have a web producer, basically, who oversees the day-to-day web stuff. And she actually also does a lot of our talent work for our website and for in-arena, for that matter. As we've gotten better about communication internally, we've we have a weekly call basically every Monday where we get together with PR, with our, the rest of our marketing department, with our video services crew, to just kind of talk through all the things that are going on, community initiatives, upcoming content pieces, game coverage, all that kind of stuff, so that everybody's on the same page and everyone can distribute that message, throughout the rest of the organization. So I think that's definitely been very helpful. I think we've been a little siloed in the past, and I think we're definitely trying to do a better job of communicating internally, which I think helps lead to much better communication externally as well.
Is there also then the ticket sales focus to come into play, and whatever's going on with email marketing, and as well as game presentation, and even sponsorship?
Yeah, you know, those are not necessarily, you know, automatics for that call, if you will. The ones I mentioned were sort of the every week, but we try to bring on people from the different departments at least once a month, so that, you know, they can hear, you know, everything that's going on. We have lots of other meetings throughout the week, as most organizations do, to make sure that we cover all that stuff. You know, it's very interesting right now because, you know, historically we've definitely had our challenges with trying to sell tickets, and that is not the case right now, which is really a fun place to be in, without question. I'm sure, you know, anybody that, you know, has the top record in the league, it's easy to say that, but this is definitely new territory for us. So it's been fun the last month or two to really be able to put our time and effort towards other, you know, towards the same stuff, but in a different way than we have in the past. You know, one thing I'll say, and I really do believe this across the board internally, is, you know, I think we've been preparing for this. You know, I'm a big believer in preparing for success. You can't control how the team's going to perform. You know, you can't control all that stuff, but what you can control is the things that you put in place. I love the fact that the team is doing so well right now. I think I'd be lying if I said I thought we'd be where we are when the season started. But, you know, sports is cyclical, and at some point we'd get there. And I always wanted us to be ready whenever that time came to take advantage of it. And I like to think that the last month or so has shown that we've been able to do that.
It's such a fantastic point. I mean, it really, really does come to play when you are ready for success and ready, like we talked about earlier too, off the call, is ready when you are dealt that winning hand. You know, how are you going to maximize the winnings? How are you going to get everything out of that pot? How about let's stay on that subject, because obviously the Hawks are the talk of the NBA. You guys are the best team in the NBA right now and are playing really well and enjoying a lot of healthy growth in web traffic as well as e-commerce. I mean, some numbers are starting to be thrown out there, and ticket sales are through the roof. So where were the Hawks in terms of how you guys really saw digital and social as potential ticket sales channels and partnership activation channels? And or did this last month and a half and all the numbers really juicing up and reflecting and showing what can happen through these channels, is it really precipitating a more rapid change in how you guys are using and valuing those channels?
Actually, I'd say, if anything, it's just validated our approach from the get-go. You know, it certainly has been, I mean, look, everything has been outsized with the way the team is playing. You know, you mentioned, you know, merchandise, we're selling through the roof like we've never had. We're selling tickets like we haven't in a long time. Our web traffic is through the roof. Like, you know, anytime a team goes on a run the way we've been, of course, all that stuff's going to happen. But the thing that makes me so happy about it is that we haven't really changed our approach, at least, you know, from a social standpoint. And from a content standpoint, it's just more people are noticing. So that's great. I could not be happier that people are standing up and taking notice. But it also makes me happy that, you know, that the things that we've been doing without people noticing have turned out sort of have been the right things all along.
Does any part of you, real quick, Micah, in terms of content, any part of you want to almost – plan on how you almost introduce this team to fans that are just now paying attention, and even you know, help get them into your sales funnel as well, and knowing that, okay, this month we're all of a sudden seeing a lot of traffic and new fans coming to our properties that have never really come across the Hawks maybe in the last couple of years?
You know, it's a great question, and it's probably one that we should spend some more time thinking about. I think what my first thought is that we've got a lot of things in place that we kind of do that are sort of like, if you didn't know what was going on, you'd wonder why that's happening. But our fans know. And I sort of like the idea that someone coming into it would notice these things and wonder what it is we're doing, and therefore be sort of curious to follow along more to find out, you know, why are they tweeting the 100 emoji every game, you know, or you know, whatever it is, the Kyle Korver, you know, fireball emoji whenever he hits a three-pointer. Like, I sort of like that aspect to it. So, you know, it's a great point, and it, like I said, it is probably something we should think about a little bit harder. But generally speaking, I like people coming in trying to find out what's going on, and that curiosity leading them to pay closer attention.
Oh, that's great! I love that sort of being knowing what the inside joke is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I'd start to get us off track there. Getting back to how you guys really do utilize your digital channels effectively to sell tickets now, and have the numbers to back that up, and how you guys really are starting to value and maybe showcase and track those KPIs.
Yeah, so I would say I wouldn't say ticket sales is the big part of it. At least if we're talking social.
I would agree with that. That's really what I see across the board with most cases.
Yeah, and you know, and I attribute that to a lot of different things. You know, we are definitely trying to drive traffic to the website. That's one of our biggest KPIs is web traffic. You know, we do retargeting a lot. We've seen a lot of success with that. We started doing that last year, and so obviously with the amount of traffic we're getting right now, we're seeing even better return on that.
Oh yeah.
You know, from a social standpoint, it's really about brand and affinity. You know, I would say that everything that we post across our channels, we either want to be informative or entertaining, ideally both, and always authentic. That's really the guiding principle for us on social is authenticity, because people are savvy on social media, and they can tell when people are BSing them without question. And so, you know, when I got here, you know, I think we were still in the very early stages, really, of using social media how it should be used. And we had a lot of sponsorship elements that were kind of, you know, pass-through messages on behalf of a sponsor. You know, we've gotten away from that as much as possible. There's, without question, room for sponsorship in social media and digital. But just a straight, you know, marketing message is not the way to do it. So, you know, we have definitely, our goal is to create awareness of the brand and to create affinity for the brand. And so that's, you know, why we've put so much time and effort into cultivating that voice, because we're an entertainment option. You know, we're a team without question, but we're not really competing, we don't think, for people's, you know, dollars in terms of, all right, I've got $75. Am I going to go to a Falcons game or am I going to go to a Hawks game? I think people have $75 and they say, are we going to go to dinner and a movie or are we going to go to the Hawks game? So entertainment is a really big piece of it. And we are, you know, in everything that we do in all of our, you know, content channels, trying to provide entertainment as an option. And hopefully that's something that we can provide consistently, whether it's coming to a game or following us on Twitter or any of that stuff, because, you know, people can select very easily what they want to pay attention to and what they don't. So the more we can make ourselves an entertainment option, the better our chances are of creating relationships moving forward.
How do you seek to track whether you guys are successful or not in that realm? Is it the so-called engagement metrics, or where are the Hawks right now in terms of tracking those efforts?
I think there's still a lot more that we can do to track that stuff. It's definitely engagement. You know, growth, I think, is definitely a part of it. But I don't think growth is the end-all be-all. You know, look, you could go out very easily and buy 100,000, you know, Twitter followers or Facebook likes. You know, again, getting back to authenticity, we want people who want to follow us because they're interested in us. Mm-hmm. We're not looking for empty, you know, likes and follows. So I think engagement is a big part of it. We want to, you know, we want to have things that create engagement. So, you know, series on social and on the web that invite people to contribute, you know, user generated content, all that kind of stuff. And then just in general, you know, we want to give people something to talk about. And we want to be a part of the conversation. You know, how we measure that, I still think I don't think we're all the way there yet. But certainly, you know, reach and engagement is a big part of it.
Let's talk about the sort of entertainment and really having that brand voice as well. I think the Hawks while you guys have had a very unique brand voice for a while, are really starting to get a lot of attention now with some of the content and the voice you guys have on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. And so I guess tell me a little about, Michael, where that voice comes from. Who sits down and says the Hawks are going to be kind of sassy and have fun with fans, or as opposed to being serious and formal, and you know, how it sort of has developed over time for you guys?
Yeah, you know, I mean, quite honestly, like, that was sort of my pitch coming into this job, was that that's what I think social media is best at. I think, you know, I feel like that's how people communicate, and it was important to me that we use social media to communicate the way that people use social media to communicate. So to sort of treat it like an extension.
What a concept, right?
Right, I know, right? It's crazy. You know, to treat it like a PR mouthpiece, again, getting back to authenticity, it's just not authentic. And people are busy and they just don't have time to you know, to mess with things that don't provide value to them. And so, you know, we're fortunate that we're, you know, in a business where you know, emotional attachment is not necessarily a difficult thing. Now, you know, levels of that certainly, and we've, you know, as a franchise in the past, that's been a big challenge of ours, is apathy within the Atlanta marketplace for our team and our product. But again, we can't control what happens on the court. We can only control, you know, what we control. And so for us, it was trying to be different, trying to stand out amongst you know, the different brands that we're sort of competing against for your attention. And you know, sports is supposed to be fun. Like, that's the whole reason that people like it. It's a release. It's a checkout from, you know, your day to day. And to me, like, that just gets lost a lot of times very easily. And so that's really what we tried to bring across with our voice, is that we're having a good time just like our fans are. You know, my sort of pitch from the beginning was, you know, I want our, you know, and talk about Twitter, because I think that's probably where our most defined voice is. Mm-hmm. You know, I want our Twitter to sort of be the voice of the Hawks fan. So we're excited when the team's doing well, and we're bummed when the team's not doing well. And, you know, we're not going to do anything that's off-brand. We're not going to slam our players or anything like that. You know, it's not always, everything's not always a win. And again, and I know I've said this a million times now, so I apologize, but it's not authentic to try to make everything like it's always 100% and everything's golden. And so I think, you know, having the ability to react the way the fans react to an extent makes us trustworthy. And shows that we're all in this together. And so that's really been what we've tried to do. You know, to the specifics of the specific voice that we have, yeah, I got to give a lot of credit to Jared, because, you know, I certainly give the direction of it, but he's the guy, you know, that's at the controls most of the time. And he's just really good at his job. So, you know, all the tweets that get picked up by SportsCenter and things like that, for the most part, that's just because he's good at what he does. So I'll take, you know, some credit for it, you know, he deserves a lot of it.
Well, and a couple of quick things on that. And first, I'm having a great conversation with Micah Hart, Director of Interactive Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks. Just a few minutes left here. How long did it take for you and really maybe the PR staff in general as well to really give Jared that ability as a social media coordinator to speak on behalf of the team and the organization, and it's just really speak like the fans were, you're comfortable with what he's putting out there, that it could end up on SportsCenter for better or for worse.
Right.
As well as, I just want to also say, I love what you had to say about speaking like your fans. It's amazing to think that we went from, you know, very strict AP style stories posted on websites to maybe changing the lead. So it was, oh, the Hawks fell short, went in a loss, to on social media, just being like, oh, that one hurt, I thought we had it, you know, and actually speaking like a fan. So I love that. But I did want to hear about what you had to say about sort of Jared taking it and running with it and you being comfortable with that.
Yeah, well, look, it's all about building up trust. And I'm not going to say that we haven't had some speed bumps along the way. You know, I think with any new venture, and even though social media feels like at this point it's been around forever, of course, it's incredibly new. You know, I started our Twitter feed I want to say in 2008, and it was really just me messing around. It wasn't anything that we had as part of, you know, overall strategy. It was just like, well, people seem to be getting on Twitter, so we might as well have a profile. So we've learned as we've gone, and there have been some missteps. But I think that's just to be expected when you're in uncharted territory. It takes time to find out, you know, where the boundaries are. And you can't really innovate and push unless you're testing those boundaries. You know, it's about building up trust with the top of the organization. It's about building up trust with our basketball operations group, with our PR department. You know, my biggest thing, and as I've communicated this with everybody and with Jared as well, is that we can't be afraid to fail. Not everything is going to work out exactly as we want. And every now and then there may well be something that could be construed as, you know, embarrassing or off-brand or whatever. You know, we want to avoid those as much as possible without question. But, you know, when you're trying to push the envelope, you know, some of those things are just going to happen from time to time. So a big part for us has been putting process in place to let everyone know that we have things that, you know, we do when things happen. So we've got guidelines, we've got rules of the road, you know, that we've shared around internally so that people know that even if it seems like we're kind of just flying by the seat of our pants, there's actually a method to our madness. And as far as, you know, as far as what Jared does, I mean, you know, I sort of brought him in slowly. You know, I used to handle the live tweeting duties, and in his first year, he was mostly doing the away games and I was doing the home games. And then last year, he kind of took over all of it. And, you know, I think this year in particular, he's really made it his own. And, you know, we just have a constant conversation going. You know, we're always trying to think of fun things to do, you know, innovative ways to do things. And quite honestly, we love to take ideas from anybody. The Spotify playlist, just as an example, that was someone who does research for our organization that had that idea. Not in our social space at all. But thought it would be a cool thing, and we were like, absolutely, we love that, let's do it. So, you know, we try to be as inclusive as possible to everybody in the organization to feel like they, you know, best idea wins, we don't care where it comes from. This is sounding incredibly corny in my head as I'm saying it, but I'll say it nonetheless. I like to think that it somewhat mirrors the way the team is doing, is that we don't care about the credit. We just want to make good things happen. And I think that's allowed us to, you know, gain some notoriety externally and get people helping us out internally.
Oh, I love that. I could talk your ear off all day asking you questions about how the Hawks really capitalized on all that on-court success too. But before we get to this episode's shareable stat, I did want to ask you one last thing, Micah, and that's kind of how you guys decide where to put forth all your resources with so many social media networks now. I mean, obviously, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram's kind of your big ones, and you have Snapchat, you have YouTube, you have Google Plus in the background, Pinterest, the mobile space, the website content only. How do you sort of decide where to focus and where to be and where not to be and all those questions?
Well, you know, obviously it's a constantly evolving area. You know, I think website still probably dominates just because we've got, you know, such established KPIs for that and, you know, business, you know, cases for it. I don't think we necessarily know social ROI yet. I think it's a very long-term play. I look at it that way. You know, we want to figure out ways to measure it, you know, on a day-to-day basis and figure out what's working, what's not, without question. But, you know, generally speaking, what I think happens on social is you engage somebody, you get their attention, and then over the course of time, maybe they buy a hat, and then maybe they buy a ticket, and then maybe they buy this, that, and the other. It's really hard to show that, you know, that process from start to finish and where social media definitively plays into it. I think it plays a big role, but it's really hard to quantify. So the website is still, you know, where our bread and butter is, but I think that's probably changing too. You know, Twitter certainly is where we put the most of our effort. It's, again, where I think we've seen the most success, so we chase that to an extent. And it's definitely the most visible one we have, and it's the one that we do the most often. Facebook is still pretty big, though obviously there are limitations there with the reach. Instagram is our fastest growing, and I think we're really trying to dive more and more into that channel as well. I could easily see that taking Facebook's place on the to-do list in the not-too-distant future, potentially. Although Facebook is still certainly a huge area for you know, for outbound marketing and sales. Snapchat, we're really just, you know, dipping our toes into now. We just did a thing this past Friday, actually, for the Warriors game, kind of an all-day you know, Snapchat fest, and doubled our followers in a day, which sounds great, but it just shows you we really didn't have that many to begin with. But still trying to grow that channel for sure. And then YouTube, I actually think we'll probably be a lot heavier on YouTube in the not-too-distant future. You know, again, sort of looking at ourselves as kind of an entertainment platform. The NBA has had restrictions on what we could do with social media in regards to highlights in the past, and those have mostly come off this season. So YouTube's kind of a channel that we've never really paid a ton of attention to in the past, but I think more and more you'll see us using to our advantage. Pinterest and Google Plus, you know, we sort of play lip service to them at this point, but we don't devote a whole lot of resources right now and haven't really seen the business case to change that. But, you know, again, as these spaces continue to evolve, you know, we're always reconsidering where we should place our resources.
Excellent. Very well thought out. And clearly the Hawks have someone in place who knows what he's talking about. And really a great conversation with Micah Hart, Director of Interactive Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks. And we're going to get to know Micah a little bit more in our Mingle with Micah segment coming up. But first, let's get this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that. Really enjoying talking to Micah Hart, the Director of Interactive Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks. Just a wealth of knowledge, really articulate, really gets it, and really understands from a strategic perspective how they can really make the most out of everything they're doing from a digital and social media angle and take advantage of the team's great success on the court. But we'll have some fun with Micah coming right up in our Mingle with Micah segment. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from a German ad agency called ARD/ZDF. I can't pronounce the rest of it, but you can look it up. And it basically talks about the second screen. Of U.S. internet users who use the internet while watching TV, which is 57% of the nation, 57% are second screeners, so to speak, 76% of them are doing something unrelated to the TV program they're watching. So of that 57% of the internet using United States who use the internet while watching TV, just 76% of them, so three quarters, that's quite a bit, are doing something that's completely unrelated to what they're watching on TV. So while that number may be a little bit skewed in terms of the sports fans who are watching TV, maybe actually doing stuff on their second screen that is related to the game they're watching, it's still something strong for really all marketers, including sports marketers, to take away from this shareable stat. And that is mainly that these internet users that are watching TV and using the internet at the same time are ripe for calls to action. They're looking for something to do, whether it's watching a sitcom that's not making them you know, talk about it on Twitter or look up more information on this actor or actress or even look more information up on the team that they're watching in the background. They are doing something. They have a device in their hand and are looking for something to do. Maybe they're checking their email. Maybe they're searching for something to go eat after the game or whatever the case may be. They are ripe for calls to action. So if you give them something compelling to do with a CTA message that is strong enough, enticing enough, and simple enough to reach this audience that has another device in their hand, it can be a potentially strong case for a marketer to start to take advantage of. So think about your calls to action that are happening on your TVs. Are they enticing? Are they easy? Is it something that you would actually do as a fan? Start thinking like a fan, especially those fans who are more and more becoming the majority, and that is that 57% who will use the internet while watching television. So that's the episode's shareable stat. 76% of those people that are second screening are you doing something on the internet that's completely unrelated to what they're watching on TV. All right. Hope you guys learned something from that shareable stat. We'll be right back to have a little fun with our guest in our Mingle with Micah segment. Think you're going to have fun with it. All right. That was this episode's shareable stat, and it's all about how, well, internet users are watching TV, and they are also doing stuff on the internet while they're watching TV, but it's not necessarily related to what they're watching on TV. So a little information about the second screen. But I can guarantee you most Hawks fans, when they're watching Hawks games, are likely on the internet talking about it and going to the Hawks website, and we are happy to be talking to the man behind all that today, Micah Hart, the Director of International Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks, who's back now for our Mingle with Micah segment. And Micah, do you imagine that a lot of Hawks fans are second screeners, whether it's home or away?
I definitely think so, and we've got we're seeing more and more of people getting creative on social with memes and things like that, and just seeing them having fun with it, just like we are. It is a lot of fun for us. You know, I'd be happy for us to never tweet anything and to only retweet stuff, you know, fun stuff our fans are doing. So, you know, the closer we can get to that, the less we have to do.
Well, they're learning from you guys. They're learning from the best, of course.
Well, yeah.
All right, Micah, you survived your interview. Are you now prepared to mingle with Micah?
I'll do the best I can.
All right, let's do it. Number one, the most memorable part of the Hawks' ridiculous winning streak in January.
I'd say for sure just the team performance, was the most fun. Just watching them play and just systematically break teams down was awesome. That's sort of the fan in me. The work side of me, the Twitter handle thing kind of took on a life of its own and was really fun for us. And we got to the point where we're sort of, you know, we don't want to look too far ahead because we don't want to jinx it. But when we saw that there was a chance that we might break our Twitter handle or, you know, our Twitter name, we realized that that was going to, you know, give us a really great opportunity. We actually contacted Twitter to see if there was any way that we could get an exception and extend it. Unfortunately, they couldn't do that. So for
listeners who are confused, give us a 5-10 seconds of exactly what you guys were doing at free.
Sorry, I live in a world where everyone knows what the Twitter.
Oh, I knew. Trust me.
But I'm just kidding. So we started doing this earlier in the year, just as kind of a laugh. Anytime we got a good winning streak going, we'd start. ATL Hawks is our Atlanta Hawks is our Twitter name. We'd start adding W's to Hawks for wins. Honestly, we didn't have like a set, set of circumstances. It was really like, oh, we've got 5 wins. Let's start doing it now. And we've just been so successful this year. We've had three win streaks of 5 games or more. And so it started really to build up in January to the point where we had to get rid of the ATL, and it was just basically all W's. And if you saw a tweet from us, it just looked like you had a tweet from www, you know, and so on and so forth. And the Twitter handle name limit is 20 characters. So when we started getting up to 15 wins or so, we had a problem. And I like to think we had a fun, creative way to solve it. We started adding letters into our avatar, which, at least if you're on your phone, it matches up, lines up with the Twitter name. That seemed like it got a lot of publicity. But so for us, the wins were great, but we just really wanted to make it to where we'd break the handle. And once we did that, I wanted the streak to last as long as possible. But I would say that and then the undefeated January, we were really rooting for that because we had some fun infographics that we were trying to create for it. But, it's hard in that space because you have to be prepared for stuff, but you don't want to jinx anything. So it was very, it was like, I don't want to talk about this, but I kind of have to, sort of thing. But fortunately, the team came through for us.
You have to quiet that fan in you. So it's like the social media person working a no-hitter, has to maybe have that infographic ready to go. But it speaks to what you talked about earlier, too, in being ready for success. And it goes to show that.
Yeah, so it was some anxious times there towards the end, the team was great, and as a fan, just watching a team perform like that was I'll never forget that win streak.
Just a lot of fun for you as a professional and as a fan. That's great. Number two for you, Micah, the Hawks player, from your observation, with the most social media use and engagement from fans.
Yeah, you know, our guys are, you know, kind of in playing along with the nature of the team, they're kind of about business. I wouldn't say there's anybody who's got sort of an outsized, you know, social persona. You know, I think Damari Carroll uses it a lot. He interacts with a lot of his fans. Al Horford is really good, and he's bilingual, so a lot of times he'll tweet stuff in English and Spanish, which is pretty cool. Wow. And Kent Bazemore is one of our, you know, one of our newer players. This is his first year on the team, and he's pretty savvy. He actually launched his own app, so he's pretty savvy in the digital space as well.
Wow, well, I guess he comes from that the Silicon Valley area, so maybe he knows that space.
That's right.
How about this one from you guys, the behind the helm of the Hawks social media? Which Hawks player generates the most social media buzz among fans, and why do you think that is?
You know, I'd probably say Kyle Korver. Which you know, it's funny because you know he himself is, you know, he has social channels, but he's not particularly active on them. But you know, the Korver counter is you know, every time he hits a three, we'll tweet a fireball emoji. I think that's taken off a lot. Last year, when he was in the middle of his record-breaking consecutive three-point game streak, Kyle streak was something that trended a lot during games. Fans, you know, and he's having the best shooting season right now in NBA. In NBA history, so I think that drives a lot. And then Mike Scott is sort of the emoji king. He's got emoji tattoos all over his arms, and fans love that. So it kind of plays in pretty nicely to our social media efforts.
I love that. Well, by the time listeners are getting this podcast, it'll have the All-Star Weekend will have passed. But just so tell us, you don't have to give away any details, but tell us, do you guys have anything special planned for the 3-point contest with the Korver counter?
We're working on it. That's I'll just say that, you know. But we have a lot of fun with it, and we're always trying to come up with new and fun ways to, you know, to play with that. So
very nice. All right, number four for you, Micah. Tell us, you know, real briefly, 60 seconds or so, about Tinder Night. Its execution, how it came about, success, and what you guys learned from it.
Yeah, you know, that honestly was the brainchild of our CEO, Steve Koonin, and it was literally the first idea he had when he took the job last summer. You know, he came in and talked about wanting to shake things up, and, you know, our target is millennials, and that's, you know, who we're going after hard and heavy. And so he was like, we're going to do a Tinder night, and put it on us to pull it off. And to his credit, it was a home run. I mean, it was... You know, when Good Morning America and SportsCenter and the Today Show were all covering it, you know, it's successful. But the people who came had a great time with it as well. And I think, you know, the takeaway to me is just always be thinking of things that would be, you know, new and different and entertaining. And that one clearly took off on its own. And fans had a great time with it. And, you know, I think we'll... You know, whether it's another Tinder night or something similar, I think we're certainly interested in trying to replicate that success as many times as possible.
Oh, it's great. It was indeed very creative. I'm just picturing now a new owner coming up to your office, your first time meeting him, and just going, I have one word for you, Tinder.
Yeah. He's been great. We've, you know, Steve Koonin comes from a media background. He ran Turner Entertainment for the last 14 years, and he's really brought that, you know, vision to the organization of, you know, being irreverent and capturing people's, you know, attention and being entertaining.
Oh, that's great. All right, Micah, maybe you guys were so well prepared, this question will be moot anyway, but if you can go back 90 days ago, knowing that the Hawks were about to embark on this incredible streak of success, would you have done anything differently? And if nothing at all, in general, what would be a tip that you would give someone to really maximize the benefits of a big streak of winning competitive success?
You know, I honestly, I don't think I would do anything differently. I think we just, the whole time, just never stopped thinking and never stopped trying to think of what could we do next. So to me, it's just be creative and don't get, you know, don't feel like you do something that works and be like, all right, well, that'll carry us over for a while. You know, I think we have tried and still continue to try to just keep coming up with fun things that we think, you know, fans will like or that we'll like, you know, because if we like it, that's usually a good indicator of, you know, what the fans will do.
Oh, that's very good advice. And, you know, it's a good time to get creative and really try outside the box things when you know that traffic is going to be coming almost either way.
Yeah, without question.
All right, number six for you, Micah, real briefly. What makes these Atlanta sports fans unique amongst the rest of the fans in the country?
You know, the biggest thing, and, you know, this is the case in some other major cities, but there's just a lot of people that aren't from here. And I use myself as the perfect example of that. I'm from Mississippi. I grew up a Saints fan. I go to one Falcons game a year. It's the Saints game, and I wear my Drew Brees jersey, and I root for the Saints. And there is nothing that the Falcons can do, marketing or otherwise, that will change me. So I think, you know, again, talking about what our leadership from the top has been stressing for us, and that's going after the younger fan. That's really where we're going to make our hay. And it may not pay off immediately, but it will certainly pay off down the road. A lot of people have moved here over the last 10, 15 years and are staying. And we may not be able to change them, but we can get their kids. And we can get the people who are here as young adults who, you know, maybe don't have a settled rooting interest at this point. I think that's a big challenge for us. It's a challenge in other cities as well. But definitely for us, that's the big key, is grabbing that attention of the younger fan.
Oh, very interesting stuff. All right, how about from your perspective, Mike, number seven, which are some of the other teams or brands, or, you know, maybe it's one or two that single out that use social media well, in your opinion, and why?
You know, I think the team we get compared to the most often is the LA Kings. I think they're definitely a team that I look to that does it really well. The Blazers, there are a lot of NBA teams, frankly, I think, that are doing a great job. Complex Magazine just had rankings, a week or two ago, ranking all 30 NBA teams on Twitter, had Blazers number one, us number two. That's probably fair. I think we beat them twice this year, so maybe they could switch it. But the Blazers are great, the Suns are great, the Sixers do a great job, even though they're having a tough season. The Bucks, the Warriors. There's really just a lot of teams, I think, that are starting to see, you know, the ways to success, and I think are trying to, you know, we're all, I think, sort of swimming in the same direction now.
Definitely, I think most, if not all, of the NBA clubs are really starting to do a great job in that space, and maybe we'll have to arrange for you and Dwayne Hankins over the Blazers to sort of settle the score somehow.
Yeah.
All right, number eight for you, Micah. You mentioned you went to University of Texas for undergrad. I think we all know it's a great school academically as well as athletically, and just a fun place with a lot of cute co-eds. So tell me, the best part of going to UT for undergrad was what?
I mean, definitely football. I was there for Ricky Williams Heisman, and that was an amazing year. I unfortunately left before Vince and Colt got there, but still got to go to the Rose Bowl for both of those games. One was great, one not so much. But the food, honestly, I love going to football games, and I love eating. Tex-Mex is like the best thing in the world, and there's basically no restaurants in Austin that don't serve chips and salsa, no matter what kind of cuisine it is. So, yeah, that's pretty much, I'm hooked if you got that. So,
Nice.
Austin's just a fun town to be in regardless.
Oh, I bet. What a fun experience going there, especially when the football team was dominating and Mac Brown was owning the town. Speaking of food, though, too, how about, and for number nine for you, what was it to get to know our guests, get to eat a lot of good food? So the best food item at any NBA venue, and also maybe the best food item you guys have there at Phillips Arena.
Yeah, so, you know, I typically, when I go to opposing venues, I eat the press meal, which is probably usually not that good comparatively. I will say that I went to a Clippers game when I was little with my dad in L.A. and had a churro, and that was the greatest thing I'd ever had. So I'm going to say, if they still have it, the churro, I guess it was at the Forum at the time, but maybe they've brought that over to the Staples Center. And then at Phillips, what's my favorite thing? There's a really good pulled pork nachos that they have in the club area that if I'm there as a fan, that's usually my go-to.
Very nice. Is there anything unusual there, or just kind of reflect the area?
I'd say Not yet, but I think in the future, I think that's something you'll see more of at the arena. I think you'll see some more sort of local kinds of places being brought in to the mix. The Braves have done a really nice job of that. They've got a Waffle House at their ballpark, which that's genius.
Very nice down there in Atlanta. Perfect. All right, number 10 for you, last one, a little bonus one to get you out of here on Micah. We talked about your Texas Longhorns roots, so we now have a little Final Four in both men's basketball and with the college football playoffs. So which Texas Longhorns team will make a Final Four in its sport first or next, the basketball or football team?
You know, if you'd asked me this question about a month and a half ago, I'd probably said the basketball team, but we've kind of hit a skid of late. So maybe football. I think I'm pretty bullish on Coach Strong and what he's bringing. We're still probably a couple years away, but I think that's probably the most likely path, if I had to guess.
Very nice. All right. Well, Micah, you survived your Mingle with Micah segment. Hopefully the football team with Texas will step it up, and I think they're heading in the right direction. But now it's your chance to give a little shout-out, your social media all-star to follow, someone on Twitter, a blogger, or whatever, and who they are and why they're worth following.
You know, I use social media for entertainment, so the people that make me laugh are really the guys that that I follow the most. You know, I'm a huge sports fan, so Network, NETW3RK, I imagine if you're a sports fan, you probably already follow him. I know he writes for Grantland and everything, and Celebrity Hot Tub, those are probably my two favorite tweeters out there.
Those are definitely some fun ones. I love it. How about where can our listeners find you as well as the Hawks on social and digital?
Yeah, so we're ATL Hawks across the board for the most part, except for Snapchat. We're Hawks Snaps on Snapchat. And, you know, if you come to the site, you can get links to all that stuff at hawks.com. You can follow me on Twitter if you care to. Micah Hart, and I'm on Instagram as well, but... You know, most of our stuff goes into the team channels. I don't think I'm super exciting to follow.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much again, Micah, for sharing us some of your time and knowledge. It's been so much fun to watch you guys really get the attention you deserve given the Hawks' success. And hopefully it'll continue, and we'll see the Hawks playing for the NBA Finals by the end of the season.
We got a long way to go, but you know, right now anything seems possible. So you know, we'll see how it goes. But it's certainly been a fun ride so far.
Well, we know one thing: if and when the time comes that you guys are raising that trophy, that your team will be prepared for it from a social digital perspective.
No question about it.
I love it. Well, thanks again, Micah. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Thank you so much again to Micah Hart, Director of Interactive Marketing with the Atlanta Hawks. Great guy to talk to, really knowledgeable, could have talked to him all day. Hope you learned a lot from him. I think I know I did. It's been a lot of fun watching the Hawks get creative and really knowing that they have a lot of thought behind it too, and we'll look forward to watching them the rest of the NBA season. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287, and please go ahead and visit the website for more podcasts and content at dsmsports.net. All right, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.